Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. I'm your host, Lily Allen Duenas. Together, we'll talk about the world of yoga and we'll talk to people from around the world. Before diving into the episode, I wanted to invite you to head on over to my Patreon account. I would love your support and I'm thrilled to have this beautiful community space where we can do yoga together, meditate together, and you'll get access to exclusive content. Get ready for some private Zoom Q&As, free printable art, meditation recordings, and more. Follow the link in the show notes to get started or head on over to any of my social media channels or my website, wildyogatribe.com, to hang out, get to know each other better, and find out more about all the support and resources available to you. Ready to dive in? Let's get started. Namaste, family, and welcome back to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. Today, I'm so excited to welcome onto the show Kaulan Popov. He's a yoga teacher from Bulgaria. He completed his yoga teacher training in Sofia, Bulgaria, and he will be graduating as a physiotherapist next year in 2023. He teaches vinyasa yoga and occasionally a specialized type of kundalini yoga. So thank you so much, Kaulan, for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Lily. I started blushing.
Well, I'm excited for our conversation, and I would actually love to just start off asking you how you first heard about yoga or how yoga came into your life.
Oh, that is actually a long story, because Bulgaria was part of the communist bloc. It was like a totalitarian socialist country. So everything connected to spirituality was forbidden until the 90s. And my father was interested in like more of these Chinese traditions like Tao and meditation and stuff like that. And afterwards, I was born in democracy, 3 years after democracy. So I remember when I was little, he was reading me this book, which was called Indian Tales. And it was actually parts of Mahabharat and Bhagavad Gita that were rewritten for children. I can say that it's a bit far-fetched, but that was first time I got connected to yoga.
Amazing that your father just had those books and I'm glad he was able to get them as soon as the country entered a democracy. But I love that he was reading you those as a child. What a gift.
Yeah, even after that, I remember him calling me to have a conversation, and he was like giving me some life lessons. And I was like, come on, Dad, I want to play computer games. And he said, do you remember the story when Arjuna wanted to hit the eye of the eagle? Like, you need to concentrate on the important stuff. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get it back then. And afterwards, when I was in the gymnasium, middle school, no, that's high school, again, high school. I had one mathematics teacher, and he was doing yoga for the past 30 years. So sometimes when he saw that we were tired of mathematics, he used to tell us stories about sacred geometry, yoga, and stuff like that. But he really kept it just not that much details. He didn't give us that much details because we were in school and he didn't want some parents to accuse him that he was trying to put us in a sect or something like that. And I think when I got 18, I went to him and I asked him, what books have you read? Because I'm interested. And he told me that I should read Drumvalo Melchizedek. Maybe you're familiar with the person.
I don't think so.
He's an American, if I'm not wrong. And he wrote a few books in the 90s and early 2000s. And it's about sacred geometry. He's speaking a lot about meditation and breath work. Not yoga mainly, but in his books, he says that he's doing yoga on a daily basis, and through yoga and meditation and breath work, he came to those thoughts. And he's also speaking a lot about the higher self, higher conscious. And that really excited me, because being a teenager, I always want to have the opportunity not to make choices, so I wouldn't bear the consequences. And when I read his books, I was like, okay, cool, so I'm going to connect to my higher self, and he's going to make all the choices for me, and I'll just sit back and relax life without doing any mistakes, without bearing any burdens. Again, when I look at it from my point of view now, 12 years later, I'm like, this will never happen, I think.
Yeah, I think we have to make decisions, even if we're going with the flow, even if we're surrendering to how life unfolds organically, which is so beautiful and so challenging. There still is the element of choice so many times.
Yeah, it's what makes us human, making choices, making mistakes. And I think this is what got me into yoga, because afterwards, I started going to university for the first time, and university life, girls, alcohol, everything that goes with it. So I put aside the spiritual thing, the meditation and the breath work. But at some point, my body really started to hurt. I was like 22, 23. I was overweight. My legs hurt even when I'm lying. So I decided I needed to do something for my body. And I picked a book, like in Bulgarian translation. It is called The Five Tibetans. I'm not sure how this is said in English. And it's a small book. The focus is on five exercises. And like, they're easy exercises. It's like up dog, down dog, stuff like this, a little bit. Exercise for the abdomens and some easy yoga postures, like five of them. So I started doing them and I started feeling better. And I was like, yeah, I remember meditation, breath work, yoga is good for me. So I got into singing mantras and listening to mantras. And I think some months after that, I was staying at home and like my flatmate called me and he said, yo, bro, I'm here at this really big yoga studio. It's their open doors day. Everything is free. I met a lot of cool people. You should come. And I went there and I really met some nice people there. One guy had like an aura camera that you put your hand on it and it shows you the temporal state of your aura, because it always changes. Some people had like gongs. They were doing gong meditation. I went to laughter yoga. I made some new friends. And that's the point from which I focus my life mainly on yoga. Because 1 year after that, I just quit my job. I had some money that I have saved, and 2 years from that day, I was living a little bit like a hippie, a little bit like a yogi. I was just spending my time going to the beach, watching the sunrise, doing some pranayama, doing meditation, trying some different like Tai Chi, Bagua, the Chinese spiritual practices, then going home, doing yoga asana. And yeah, I spent 2 years like that. And afterwards, I started teaching yoga, actually.
So was that center you're talking about where you did gong meditation and laughter yoga, was that in Sofia?
Yeah, that's in Sofia. The thing about Bulgaria is that like we're 6 million people in the country and 2.5 million live in Sofia. So most things happen in Sofia, which is the capital.
That's amazing. What's the name of that center?
It's called Mandala.
Okay, Mandala Sofia. Very cool. Yeah. I'll try to find it and link it here in the show notes, because it sounds like such an amazing center to have. I don't know if
every country or even a quarter of the countries around the world have a spiritual center like that has those aura readers, that kind of, I forget the technical term, but a color spectrometer for auras, and to have access to these different modalities on the spiritual path, like that's really unique.
I think they opened it 8 years ago or 7 or 8 years ago. And at that point, it was the biggest yoga center on the Balkan Peninsula. And it's really nice. It's 3 floors. There are like massage rooms, meditation rooms, 3 yoga halls, and a lot of different stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. And so for you to decide, okay, I want to quit my job, I want to become a yoga teacher, what was your training like? And now that you're teaching, what has that kind of brought into your life? Or how has teaching yoga transformed your days?
To be honest, when I started teaching, I kind of made a step back from yogic life, because you know, before that I didn't have any work to do, I didn't need to follow the clock, I could be everywhere, do whatever I like. When I started teaching, I got a little bit back in my normal life, but I decided to do it because those 2 years that I have spent on working on myself, rediscovering myself, and I found that I really want to teach people what I have been taught and what I know, and teach them from my experience. And actually, I started teaching yoga 1 year before I got my teacher training, because here in Bulgaria, it is not very strict about that, because it's a small country and yoga was popular at some point. It's still popular, but there are few people, and I may say that everybody knows each other. It changed me in a way, because after I started teaching yoga, I thought that I want to have higher education. So I decided to study physiotherapy because it is really close to yoga. Because in physiotherapy, you have the healing movements. We teach patients to do exercises. Some of them are really close to Hatha yoga. And we teach them to do breath work. And most of the breath work is identical to pranayama. And there are also some relaxation techniques that are really close to meditation, or like some psychologist or some doctor studied yoga and he put something from him and he made like a relaxation technique. So when I started teaching yoga, I lit the fire for studying the human body, studying human emotions, and I found out that I really want to help people through movement and through meditation and through breathwork.
Amazing. I also agree that the physical therapy and physiotherapy element, there is so many similarities between yoga, yoga teachers and physiotherapists, because when I've had to go to a physical therapist for something in my body, you're right, there's breathwork involved. There's a lot of talk about calming the nervous system as well. And we hold so much tension in our body and in our muscles without even realizing it. And it's about tuning in, tapping in and saying, okay, how can I breathe and be mindful of where I'm clenching and holding and gripping, especially we'll say like in the pelvic floor. That's a very tense area of the body. So there's asana, breath work, and meditation. I love that you brought that up. I don't think any other yoga teacher has talked to me about that yet.
It is very important. Actually, last Friday, I went to a science convention and I presented a study that yoga is better than physical exercises when it comes to diabetes 2 patients. And I read a few meta-analyses, I read a few clinical studies, and what my colleagues have found is that yoga is better when it comes to lowering the blood glucose in these diabetes type 2 patients, and it also lowered their blood pressure better. And actually, like you said about stress, not only in the pelvic floor, but nowadays we really experience a lot of stress, and the hormone of stress is called cortisol. And this cortisol, it has a connection to blood glucose. So people that experience a lot of stress, they have higher levels of blood glucose chronically. And this leads to obesity, this leads to insulin resistance, and sometimes it may lead to this diabetes.
Yeah, I know that when, you know, we get stressed, our physiological response to stress is pretty intense. Like it is on high alert, and it involves all of the aspects of our body, from the musculoskeletal to the respiratory, cardiovascular, endocrine. And as you said about the glucose, I know that when we feel stress, and remember that stress could be like an email or traffic, or it doesn't have to be a stress like a tiger's chasing us. But I know that glucose and fats and proteins are released from our fatty tissues when we feel stress. So it's released from the fatty tissues, so we don't have time to actually digest properly. The cells just need the glucose, fats, and proteins like to do their job as quickly as possible, like they are running from a tiger. That's the level. They're like, okay, we have to immediately have this at our easily and quickly available glucose, fats, proteins to just go for fight and flight. Yeah. So it's like, you can't be digesting when you're running. I like to think of that. If I was running a marathon, my body shouldn't be digesting food. And so it's similar. If I get a bad email, have a stressful situation in my car, or actually am being chased by a lion or a tiger, that my body has the same response.
Yeah, and actually, like a lot of people talk about how much the air is polluted nowadays, and this is the cause of premature death, but actually, we don't put much attention on stress, because, you know, everybody feels okay. I have to work from 9 to 5, then take care of my kids, try to do some extra work to get some extra money, and we are high on stress. And actually, stress is, it may not be the number one cause, but it's in the front places when it comes to like premature death. And one of the best cures for this surely is yoga.
I agree. It surely is yoga. So I love to ask all my guests also on the show this question. It's, what is your personal definition of yoga?
Oh, that is very philosophical. For me, yoga is just part of my life, big part, because I spent 2 years mostly between yogis, yoga people that teach yoga, people that do yoga. So actually, the story is that when I went to this center, Mandawa, I met one guy there. It was actually the guy with the aura camera, and we became friends. And at some point, he started traveling around the country. Like, people were inviting him to their yoga studios around the country. And he told me that if I want, I can go with him, help him carry his bags. Like, and I was like his student. So for some time, I was traveling the country, and I went to almost every yoga studio in the bigger cities, met a lot of yoga teachers, I met a lot of yoga students. And that time, yoga was my whole life. But nowadays, I might say it's like half of my life. The thing is that when it comes to like everyday life, yoga bears a lot of stereotypes. When I go to university or to the hospitals where I have practices, when I tell them that I teach yoga, most people look at me and they are like, oh, you want to look at girls in strange positions and stuff like that. So I'm actually trying to put science to yoga, and I want to show people that the yoga is more than the stereotypes that they have in their mind.
Yeah, there are so many stereotypes around yoga, and I think it's, I don't know the word, but it's almost like omnipresent. Like it's in every corner of the world. People have stereotypes around yoga, whether they think yoga is witchcraft, like in Mexico, not everywhere in Mexico. I'm just generalizing based on what other guests have said, that they've thought that yoga is witchcraft, or in Catholic countries, we could say that yoga has been thought of like a cult with a lot of concern, or yoga can also be thought of as just strictly a religion, or it can also be thought of as just as an exercise, just as going to the gym and exercising in that way. And so I think our duty, our responsibility as yoga teachers is to help shine a light and spread the message on what really is yoga and what can yoga be. I mean, yoga doesn't have to be the whole all-encompassing, enormous path of spirituality and with all the eight limbs. It doesn't have to be that way for every person. I'm not advocating like full yogic path for the whole world, because I acknowledge we all get to make that choice. But I do think just understanding, oh, it's not a cult, it's not witchcraft, it's not religion, it's not XYZ, just clearing up those stereotypes. Even when you said about people saying, oh, you just want to look at women in tight clothing. So there's so much, I think, to unveil about yoga.
Actually, now that you talked about it, I remember it 5 or 6 years ago here in Bulgaria, a person from the church wrote like an essay, and he published it like a book, and it was called Yoga Path Towards the Devil. And like the media in Bulgaria tried to make it something big. There were interviews from the church, from yoga instructors. But it all went away. But there are still some people that think that yoga is the path towards the devil. And for example, my mom is a school teacher. And she's like, I want you to teach yoga at our school. But some parents might think that it's not appropriate because it's a cult or it's a religion or something like that. Whereas I haven't read upon many scientific researches, but I'm sure that also, kids may benefit a lot from yoga and from the physical exercises, from the breath work, from meditation, because nowadays, even in Bulgaria, there are many kids that have ADHD, and they're really struggling to stay at school because, you know, they're bored. Actually, now I remember it, I worked as a yoga teacher in kindergartens. Yeah, it was just for 1 year because I learned that working with kids is not my thing.
It's not for everyone, that's for sure.
Yeah, for first day on the job, I did everything perfect. I went back home, I went to bed, closed my eyes, and I could hear kids screaming and I could see them running around. I find it more pleasing to work with adult people because, you know, I like to explain things in detail. When I teach a little bit slower, I teach vinyasa mostly, but I don't do it in this fitness way. I give them repetitions, but while doing the repetitions or while holding the pose, I get into detail about where your knee should be, where your finger should point. And I really like to put the details in yoga.
That's great. And so I know we've talked about it throughout the whole conversation too, but how would you describe yoga in Bulgaria? Like today, in the past, I know you mentioned it was forbidden, obviously because of the communist era, but then in the democracy, it just, do you think, slowly grew, and now do you feel like it's as popular as other European countries, or what's the pulse, would you say, on yoga in Bulgaria?
It's actually strange because even though it was forbidden during communist era, I think I have a book that is from that times, and it's zenith of the era, but it's like in the middle, like it was 1973, 1 or 2 books about yoga, and it's a Bulgarian author. So But it's a bit strange. I'm not the person to talk about that because I was born like 20 years after that. But nowadays, I think yoga in Bulgaria is like most European countries, also like the USA, because, you know, now Bulgaria and the whole world is looking towards Western Europe and America, and probably is the same. I haven't been traveling for yogic reasons. I've been to a few yoga classes by foreign teachers, mostly American, and I've talked to some American yoga teachers and some UK yoga teachers, because actually I know them as like online subscriptions for yoga videos, and they actually shoot some of the videos in Bulgaria.
That's really cool.
I think the one was called Udaya Yoga, and they shoot it like 3-4 years in a row. They shoot their videos in Bulgaria, and after that they made like a yoga festival in one of the bigger hotels in the countryside. So I went to the shooting. I talked to a lot of the teachers. And when it comes to teaching yoga, like, my teacher is an Indian. He's called Sanjay Yogi. He's a student of Swami Devamurti, which is known as the Himalayan bear, I think. But when it comes to teaching, I might say that I mostly look up to Dylan Werner. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. I need to apologize for that. He's very famous. He's an American teacher. So I think my colleagues also look up to mostly American teachers, Western Europeans. I think there are some really good, famous teachers from Southern America. So I might say that nowadays everyone wants to follow the trend. And the trend is set by the bigger countries. But I think 4 or 5 years ago, yoga was very popular. Everybody was going to yoga. Nowadays, it's okay, but it's not what it was. Especially after COVID, some people still feel a little bit afraid. They don't want to go to a lot of crowded places. And maybe that's stopping some people to go to yoga classes.
Yeah, the pandemic changed so much, and especially for yoga teachers and gyms and fitness centers. It changed everything, but I am grateful now that things are open again and we can be practicing together, because there's such magic when you're practicing in a classroom with people, just feeling the energy of everyone in unity in the same movement. Do you know? Like, it's just an energetic thing. I love it.
Yeah, when COVID came, I was like, okay, people need to do yoga. They want to do it. So after that, I started doing some yoga videos. And it was also good because, you know, it's better to teach yoga to give to the people so they can make their practice. Because, you know, for me, it was strange because I have always done my own practice. Like a lot of my colleagues, they go to different yoga practices for 4 or 5 years. Then they go take the teacher training and then they start to teach. Whereas I have mostly done my practice at home. And I think this is the best everyone could do. When I talk to my students, most of them, they say it's better when I come here. I have my peaceful spot. You are around. You lead me. If I do something wrong, correct me.
Yeah, I think the self-practice is such an important element, like for everybody who wants to practice yoga, to find a space in their home or right outside their home where they can feel like that's their space to do their sadhana, their practice. But I do know that there is still magic in the yoga centers and in the yoga classrooms and shalas when we're all together practicing, especially with a teacher who sees what we can't see sometimes, or guides us and into certain shapes, or there's just so much creativity in yoga sequencing. Or I know I avoid certain pranayamas because it's like, oh, that's not my favorite. So it's nice that with teachers, they don't have the same kind of tendencies and habits or patterns that we ourselves have kind of, we reach, we have those cravings and those resistances to certain asanas or certain meditative practices or pranayamas. And so it's nice when a teacher is like, no, you're going to hold that way longer than you would. Okay. You know, I would also like to ask you, Cohen, just about Bulgaria in general, in case some of our listeners aren't very familiar with Bulgaria or curious and want to learn more. Can you share with us a little bit about your country?
What can I tell you? It's a really nice country. There is a lot of nature. We have a lot of beautiful mountains. We also have nice seaside. And I think this is what I mostly like about Bulgaria, and all the nature and a lot of trees everywhere. But yeah, it's really nice to come on a vacation here. Otherwise, I don't recommend it.
You don't recommend it? What do you mean?
I don't know. It's like we're part of the European Union, but I think we still need a lot of work to do to catch up.
Yeah, I think every country has a lot of work to do, to that we all have our own responsibilities or weaknesses or things that just don't feel right, you know, in this day and age. So I love that. I think we're all trying to improve as we can as individuals, and then hopefully the community, and then hopefully it just grows and grows from there.
Yeah. Actually, like I told you, I was living in the UK for 1 year, and I spent some time in Glasgow, Scotland. Then I spent some time in Coventry, England. And I decided to go back to Bulgaria, so it's not that bad, actually.
Yeah, it is your home. And so Bulgaria, I know, also has amazing skiing, right?
Yeah, a lot of places. But I'm more of a summer type of guy. I like the warm weather and the seaside, beaches, lying in the sun, doing pranayama on the shore. And we actually have a lot of hot water springs. If I'm not quite sure, although it's part of my physiotherapy specialty, but I think Bulgaria is second in place after Iceland for the numbers of hot water springs.
Well, that's very special. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I have loved having this, just such a cool conversation with you, Cohen. And if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, I think that Instagram's probably the best way to do that. I'll link your Instagram and your YouTube channel here in the show notes, so anyone can just click it and find you, or they can go to my website, wildyogatribe.com/yoga in Bulgaria. And you can find show notes, a transcription, you know, everything you need to know on Cohen. But is there anything else you want to share about how people can get in touch with you, or any last thoughts?
I think Instagram is okay. And well, last thoughts. I think we have a lot to think about still.
Yeah, always. There's always more. And I think that's something I love about yoga too. There's always more.
And I'd like to thank you that you gave me the opportunity to be part of your podcast. It is actually the first podcast that I was part of.
Thank you so much, Cohen.
Oh, thank you, Lily.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. My conversation with Cohen Popov, a yoga teacher from Bulgaria, was so lovely as we dove into the physiological responses of the body to stress and how yoga can serve the health of humanity. I hope that this conversation made you curious about how yoga can help those around you and yourself on the path to health and wellness. If you're looking to tune into a podcast episode that's all about yoga for health, then this is the conversation for you. Thank you for listening to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. Be well. Thank you for the gift of your attention today.
if you feel called, please share this episode with someone who you think could benefit from it. Leaving a review would also be so appreciated. I also hope you can join me online on my website, wildyogatribe.com, or on social media. I would love to get to know you better. I would love to share with you and to hear your thoughts. Send me a DM, send me a note, get in touch. It would be great to hear from you. And as always, be well, dear one. Be well.